Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on today's program, racial tension and terrorism continue to threaten the U.S. and Western nations. You've seen a lot about that lately in the media. Where are these events leading? We've got a great book to talk about today that has the answers to these questions and a lot more. That's all coming up today on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well, and you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at kpcgfm. Any emails you'd like to send, comments, things like that, send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. Quite an exciting, I don't know if exciting is the right word, tense weekend in a lot of ways. I think everyone was watching the news and saw that there was lots of protests and violence going on there in Virginia, and just kept escalating. I was, you know, looking at the headlines on, I think it was Saturday, and it started out as a protest, and then you check it a few hours later and things had you know, increased and increased and increased. And so now we're in the fallout of that time period.
Right. That was quite a crazy event that took place over the weekend there in Charlottesville, Virginia. It originally started as an attempt to protest the taking down of a statue of Robert E. Lee there in the city. He is a hero of history, and a lot of people are trying to get rid of all of that because the Confederacy obviously had slavery. It's still a reality of history. You can't just close your eyes and erase the history because you don't like it. Of course, a lot of people who showed up to that protest against taking down the statue were neo-Nazis, which made a lot of people in Antifa really upset, and they came and they had pretty much an all-out war.
Yeah, this Antifa group, I guess. I hadn't known much about them. Or actually, I knew nothing about them. I read a little bit recently. They're sort of the group that's protesting these other protesters, and they're having their back and forth battle, I guess. So a lot of tension, a lot of problems there, and we want to talk about that today in light of a very important book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. It's a free book at thetrumpet.com. As you can guess from the title, it's about the book of Ezekiel in the Bible, and it talks about what you see happening right now in this time period. And of course, as we were mentioning here, we are living in a very tense time in the United States. These racial issues, other issues, constantly coming up in the news. And of course, like we said here, the past weekend we saw the violence in Virginia. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury talked a lot about some aspects of that. Great program. Make sure you go back and listen for that at kpcg.fm or at thetrumpet.com. Archives are there if you can't catch it live, if you missed it or missed part of it. So make sure you listen for that. That talks about quite a bit of what happened there. And we're going to talk a little bit just to hear about some of the headlines and some of the reactions. This is just a snapshot of some of the headlines from a day or so ago. Police stand down blamed for Virginia chaos, so the police situation is involved. Monuments vandalized in Atlanta. That's spreading. Kentucky mayor said Confederate monuments will be moved. Protesters aim at Tennessee Capitol bust. Gainesville removes Baltimore monuments to be destroyed. So they're going after all this history. Sides clash in Dallas. Seattle heats up. So it's all across the nation. Then social media is getting involved in a very dangerous way. Man with same name as driver in attack fears for his life, because people put his home address and other things up. It's not the same guy. He has the same name. So, but people don't know that, and they're reacting to these things. And so the reaction's been quite strong to the weekend's activities. You've got some headlines here about some of the reaction, too.
Right. The big problem, it seems, is the mainstream media trying to stoke all this and cause even more division. Somehow they're making themselves out to be worse than Antifa and the neo-Nazis by just the way that they are really making this problem a lot worse than it has to be. President Trump clearly condemned it the same day it happened, I believe on Saturday, and it was a pretty clear condemnation of all the violence. A lot of witnesses said that Antifa actually started the violence. Regardless of what you think of neo-Nazis, they had obtained a permit to protest there. They had been engaging in their right to legal assembly in public. Of course, that's going to make some people upset to see that kind of a protest held in public, but it was their right to do that. Antifa seemed to initiate most of the violence, and so he condemned the hate on all sides, because clearly people on the far right and the far left were involved in violence. Because he condemned both sides and didn't completely ignore Antifa's part in it, he was in a lot of trouble for that. Apparently, the whole media was furious that President Trump didn't just focus on the neo-Nazis.
Yeah, and I think it was brought out on the Trump Daily program how you have extreme groups, far left, far right, but what's happening is they're sort of trying to make everybody that's more in the middle go to one side or the other. They're trying to make it a battle like that, I think, with some of the media that's out there. So instead of diffusing the situation, it seems like the tensions are being ramped up more and more through a lot of the media coverage.
Exactly. And if you think about just the amount of violence that was there, it wasn't just people who were there with shields and body armor and weapons. There was a story of a grandpa bringing his small grandson to the monument to just, you know, kind of express support for preserving American history. And then, of course, they're caught right in the middle of all that as well. And the media is the one reporting on all these things, bringing these protests to light so that everyone around the country knows it's about to happen. And they have time to plan and prepare to, I guess, have a response to it. But the media was very upset, of course, at the response. Then Mr. Trump, a day or two later, because apparently his first response wasn't strong enough, he came back and condemned white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and the KKK by name. And apparently that wasn't enough, because it's not exactly word for word what he had said the first day that it had happened. Jim Acosta, who has made a name for himself on CNN by just almost throwing childish tantrums in the press room whenever there's a briefing going on, he said Trump did not take questions. He was asked by reporters why he waited so long to condemn hate groups. He did not respond. Then another CNN colleague had some criticism as well. NBC's Katie Tour said it's striking that he has to carefully read it off a teleprompter. He railed against prompters, yet he can't speak from the heart about racism. So, of course, she's implying that the president is a racist and has sympathies for these, white racist groups. And then Kelly O'Donnell, a White House correspondent, said, hatred, bigotry, and violence. He names them under pressure, implying that he wouldn't have said anything otherwise. So the media is really just jumping all over this opportunity. Dan Rather said, was Trump's statement too little too late? He began by bragging about accomplishments, then briefly dealt with talk about racism. Someone even compared it to the murder of Kate Steinle in San Francisco. She was murdered by an illegal immigrant who had been deported, I believe, around six times. So this person said, striking how vivid Trump has been in describing, say, Kate Steinle, in contrast to the complete absence of detail about Heather Heyer, even though he specifically named her in a tweet that he sent out. So I don't know if they're just ignoring all reality because he's the object of all of their scorn, but they really are just going all out to attack him. And I don't really know the logic of it either. The media and all these celebrities have completely blamed the president for what happened in Charlottesville, as if he planned it behind the scenes almost.
Yeah, it's very, they're very focused, certainly, in the direction they're going with their reports. And that's really a really important point. I mean, you look at these different events, you look at the tensions, and you say, okay, so where is this heading? You can't get any understanding about that from media reports like this. in either side of it. There's a interesting write-up from an article from How Stuff Works, which is kind of an interesting little website. They have some interesting articles at times, but they talk about media today, and they say, we live in a confusing media world. The news used to be something you would read in a printed newspaper or what the guy on TV with good hair talked about at 5 o'clock every weekday. So I guess that's true. They say whether you thought the news of the day was good or bad, it didn't change the fact that it was still the news, something that most people agreed on and agreed it was important and in most cases true. They say that's not the case anymore. Thanks to deep political polarization and an explosion of news-ish content shared on social media, whether a news item is real or fake is now mostly a matter of personal opinion. And that's true. You hear a lot of personal opinion. They say if the news fits our preconceived political notions, then it's real. Otherwise, it's biased, crooked, conspiratorial, and even Soviet-style propaganda. And I think that's a good point in a way. Most of the news you get today is personal opinion. What you read there to us was people's personal opinion. It's not fact.
Right. And a lot of these people are on big not even cable networks, but just the big national local channels. So it's not just commentators who are saying these things. These are news anchors, people who are not supposed to inject opinion at all in most cases. And here's another one, a Republican strategist of all people. She called the president a coward. She said that his response was shameful. She said he is unfit to be president. In my book, his lack of empathy, his lack of leadership, his lack of courage, he's unfit to be human.
Wow.
And she even called him a shameful nincompoop.
Well, that's, again, it's opinion, and it's not based on fact. It's emotion. It's opinion. And so what we're going to do today when we look at what is written in this book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet, about some of these things you can see today and where they're leading, is not give opinion and avoid that. And just take a look what's written in the book. Obviously, it's this book, Ezekiel the End Time Prophet, is going and looking at what the Bible says, what Ezekiel says. Now, people don't love that. That's something a lot of people don't like, but it's not an opinion issue. It's what the Bible says. So we're going to take a look at that. It's a free book. It's at thetrumpet.com. We're highlighting it today because it's very important, especially in these times in which we are living. There's quite a few chapters in there. It's a pretty good-sized book. But the main chapter we want to focus on is chapter 4, which is terrorism and race riots. That's the title of the book, or that chapter. And this is what's written by the author, Gerald Fleury. America, Britain, and Israel have a terrible problem on their hands. Violence. Violence from domestic troubles like race riots. Violence from terrorist attacks. Would you say that's true? Is that a fact?
Yeah, it's very true. And a lot of the problems that we're seeing are just coming from a lack of authority, because in so many of these situations, if you see a city on fire, what had to happen was the leadership in that city and the police in that city backing off, standing down, and even, quote, giving space to destroy, apparently, which is what the Baltimore mayor said.
Right. This quote continues here from Mr. Fleury from this book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. It says, there is deep racial division and hatred in America. And he says, the Philadelphia Church of God, which is the sponsor of this program, doesn't take sides. We teach God's prophecies. I think that's an important point because everyone wants to take a side in these disputes. Not taking a side here. This book isn't taking a side other than God's side, which is a good side to be on. And so we're going to take a look at that today. Yeah, it also talks about terrorism in this chapter, and that's happening too. This weekend, we almost had a terror attack in Oklahoma City. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Incredible. Wow. Washington Post. Oklahoma man charged an anti-government bomb plot. The FBI arrested an Oklahoma man on charges that he tried to detonate what he thought was a 1,000-pound bomb, acting out of hatred for the U.S. government and an admiration for Timothy McVeigh. He tried to blow it up downtown Oklahoma City. Thankfully, it didn't work.
That's exactly what it sounded like when you said that. Anti-government, that was what Timothy McVeigh's whole point was when he blew up a building, a federal building in Oklahoma City all those years ago. It's kind of the same thing. I don't know what his angle is, if he hates the current administration or if he just thinks that government overreach is obsessive at this point or excessive. But that does seem to be a problem. No matter where you are, even in a place like this where people might lean more towards small government, they're still willing to act on those beliefs using violence.
Yeah, so thankfully that did not work. That would have been a disaster. So, but there's a lot of whatever side of the issues people are on, there's a lot of problems there. Both sides are being taken by the media, especially many outlets, are on the hunt to find any racial divisions that they can, it seems like, and stir them up. And they're just on the hunt for it. As an example, one of the recent Time magazines here has this little section I showed you the other day. And the title is The Hidden and Not So Hidden Racism in Kids Literature. So they have a whole write-up about classic kids literature that we all read as kids, I would think, including The Cat in the Hat, Little House on the Prairie, Pippi Longstocking, which I never read, but some people did, and the story of Babar, I guess, the elephant. There's a whole write-up about how those books are racist. I didn't read all the details, but when you're on the hunt for things like that and you're stirring it up, I mean, what's the point of this, of a write-up like this? It just seems like it's trying to stir the pot and get people more and more upset.
That's nothing close to edifying in any way, and that's what the media seems to be doing, is looking for ways to create grievances among people and cause division. It's just a horrible situation we're dealing with right now. Really, the reason this church doesn't take sides is because those different sides are all different forms of evil. I mean, if you talk about neo-Nazis, Hitler killed 6 million people or more, and 60 million people were killed in the war that he started. The neo-Nazis are trying to follow in his footsteps. If you're talking about people on the radical left, they lean more toward communism, which has killed hundreds of millions of people under Mao, under Stalin. Those are all different forms of evil. They're extreme, they're godless, they're lawless. And then you have the media, which I guess makes a lot of money off of pushing their agenda as well, and they don't care who dies on the street.
Yeah, it's really pick a side, which one's going to be right. You know, there's problems in all of them. This book, Ezekiel, here's a quote from Mr. Fleury. It says, well, he's quoting Isaiah 1, 4 through 5 here. And it says, "You will revolt more and more," talking about America, some of the Western nations. "The whole head is sick, the whole heart is faint." And as he says, this is talking mainly about the U.S., Britain, and the Jews in the Middle East. You can look at each one of those nations and say that's pretty true today. He says, "The whole head is sick." God is saying the power structure that leads these nations of Israel is sick. "And the whole heart is faint. Neither the leaders nor their followers have the will or the strength to get the roots of race riots or terrorist attacks and solve them once and for all." He says, "Their heart is so weak and unhealthy that the governmental system is about to faint or collapse." You see pressure on the systems in the U.S., the U.K., and in Israel and the Middle East today against the governments from really almost all sides. And like he says here, those structures are about to collapse because of all these problems.
That appears to be intentional on the part of the media and on the part of a lot of these different evil groups. Really, they are evil, what they're trying to accomplish. But they think that if they can overthrow the system and rebuild it their own way, somehow it'll work better. The media is stirring up grievances in every single way so that even a facial expression or a meaningless gesture could be racist. That is not productive. That's not going to make anyone's day better. It's just going to have everyone walking around paranoid of offending people or paranoid that they're being offended. It's just a terrible situation. And the media clearly has a shocking lack of foresight. They don't quite understand what they're stirring up here.
Yeah, and towards the end, it's not all bad news. There is a good solution to these things, but we do have to highlight some of these problems here in the beginning. In relation to, say, the U.S. government or other governments just having this strain on them, there's plenty of articles out there. People are questioning the Constitution of the U.S. They want something else, or nothing else, maybe. There is a news story today where there's this controversy about whether players should stand up during the national anthem. that started with that a year or so ago, and now it's evolved to this new article saying, hey, look, let's just do away with the national anthem at sporting events. Let's just get rid of it. We don't need it. And you think about how much that the thinking has changed, even from 9/11. You remember that there was quite a swell of patriotism. Everyone was really going all out to show their support for America after that terror attack. And now here we are, like, what, about 15, 16 years on, and they're saying, just get rid of the anthem altogether. Well, what next? The flag? The Constitution? Where does it stop? You can see it's leading to, as is written here in this Ezekiel booklet, the collapse of these nations.
Right, and you can't really think of any other nations besides America, Britain, and the Jewish nation that are treat themselves this way, that are afflicted with so much guilt for their history, even though their history is some of the greatest and brightest ever. I mean, you look at the way this country was founded on numerous miracles, so much sacrifice to even to keep the Union together during the Civil War and to abolish slavery. 600,000 people died to abolish slavery. That's the legacy of this country. What other nation has gone to such great lengths to get rid of slavery, which is evil? We know that. That's why we got rid of it. And yet people are still being stirred up to take any grievance and to exploit victimhood somehow. We're past that. This is not a racist nation, and yet people are trying so hard to trick people into thinking that it is, so that they will get violent about it.
Yeah, that it's a quote here from this Ezekiel booklet. Again, it's free at thetrumpet.com. It's quoting Isaiah 1, 6, and 7 here, and it talks about what you can expect to see. And this is just the facts of it. It says, from the sole of the foot even unto the head, there is no soundness in it. You know, as you highlighted there, Grant, just in terms of the way some of these things are being presented in the media, there's no soundness in that. It says, but wounds and bruises, putrefying sores, they have not been closed or bound or mollified with ointment. They're not been healed in any way. So we see these divisions not being healed in any way. And then it says, your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence, and it is desolate as overthrown by strangers. Your cities are burned, it says. And so you're going to see that. I mean, we have seen that already. There are examples of that. You have the L.A. riots from a few years back. Baltimore, this weekend wasn't as big as some of those, but it certainly was kind of along that trail as well. That's where it is heading because of the weakness, the problems, the sins burning in the cities.
Right. You mentioned those L.A. riots. This book goes into some details about that. Almost 60 people died. $1 billion in damages there in L.A. back in 1992. And remember, it started because four police officers were acquitted in the beating of Rodney King, a black man. We can already see, even back then, the building hostility toward police that really, it bloomed big time the last 8 years, where the president, without any facts, would go to the support of the black victim and never support the police. And then, almost in every case, the facts would contradict what he had said, and the police would be right. But look at just the hostility toward authority. It's just a trend toward lawlessness, and people are furious at the police now, as if what they're doing is going on the hunt for certain minorities.
Yeah, and in that case, in 92, there in Los Angeles, there's a lot of documentaries about that you can see, where when they interview the police chief, I believe it was, he's still quite distraught because they were told to stand down, as we've seen happen here recently, even over the weekend. Stand down. Don't do anything. Don't stop it. So what happens? You had this escalation of violence and over $1 billion, like you said, of damage. 40,000 jobs were lost. All kinds of problems. They could have stopped it, but they stood down because they were afraid to act in any way. So what's the result? People policing themselves? Good luck. That's not going to happen.
Right. And the reason they stand down is they think that's some sort of a way to let people vent their anger and eventually come back to their senses and find peace. Really, that doesn't happen, because people are still going to remember that they were attacked in the streets. They're still going to remember that their businesses or their homes were destroyed, or that the place where they've lived in relative safety has been turned into a place of utter chaos now. Those types of memories last. People will remember what had happened the last time. They'll be mad at the authorities for not stopping it. They'll be mad at the other race for you know, basically engaging in a war against them. You could stop all those hostilities. Really, it goes far beyond the damage that takes place in that one city, because the bitterness is still there. The resentment toward authority and toward the other side is still there, and it's going to lead to even more violence the next time it's sparked.
It does escalate. It's a bad cycle. And of course, also tied into this same chapter, this is a chapter, this is the fourth chapter of this Ezekiel booklet. It's at thetrumpet.com. It's free. Check it out. Talks about also terrorism as well, which of course has been a major problem. And of course, there's domestic terrorism. There's other types of terrorism. And that's happening all over. In the UK, that's happened recently, especially. And there's this right up here about some of the acid attacks that have become a brutal new trend in the UK. So people are afraid of, you know, major terror attacks, like, say, a building going down or something like that. But here in the UK now, they're afraid of somebody just walking up to them on the street and throwing acid in their face. And that's happened quite a bit here in the last year.
And it just shows you it doesn't matter what the weapon is. There are people within our nations that want to destroy. And again, it's made possible by a weak response from the leadership. You have someone like Jeremy Corbyn, who is the leader of the Labour Party over in Britain, and he's actually friends with people in Hamas and Hezbollah. That's not the type of leader who is going to offer a strong response to terrorism like that.
Yeah, this write-up here, and this is from Time magazine, and it says that in what has become a disturbing trend in the UK, especially in the capital city of London, according to the Metropolitan Police, assaults using corrosive materials spiked more than 70% in 2016, having risen steadily over the past 3 years. This year alone, more than 119 attacks have been recorded so far. On July 13th, five people were doused with acid within the space of 90 minutes in separate attacks across northeastern London. So what's the response to that? Well, they say the British public is beginning to awaken to the trend. I would hope so. A national petition calling for tougher laws on the sale of corrosive materials has received nearly 500,000 signatures. So their solution to it is to try to make it harder to get acid or corrosive materials. And 500,000 people have signed some things. And the government is considering more severe sentences for people that commit the crime. For victims of that, you do have a life sentence. You've got burns on your body that you will have for the rest of your life, probably loss of eyesight. And that's the strongest response that they can muster, is to sign some petitions.
They're trying to treat the effect and not the cause, not the radical, perverted ideology that leads people to try to attacks like that in the first place. Even if they did get rid of acid, all they'd be doing is bracing themselves for the next of many hundreds of weapons that the terrorists could choose. That's really all it comes down to, is you're taking away one weapon only to be replaced very soon by another. That's just an absolutely pathetic response, when really, why not say something like, we'll unleash fire and fury, just like our president did? Why not speak to them in the language they understand, which is, we'll wipe you out if you dare harm any of us?
Yeah, and as a side there, North Korea is standing down a little bit. So maybe
it works.
Maybe it had some effect.
It's not pleasant to a lot of people who think that you always need to resort to diplomacy, but people like that who are willing to throw acid on other people or bomb other nations for no reason. I mean, North Korea doesn't have any reason to hate us like they do. Those types of people don't respond to anything but the threat of force pointing right back at them.
Yeah, so this chapter 4 here in this Ezekiel booklet about, again, terrorism and against the rioting in the cities does show you where these events are leading. It's a free book. It's at thetrumpet.com. And you can order it, have it sent to you, which is a great way to do it, or you can just read it online. And then this chapter gets into some of what Ezekiel the prophet talks about in the Bible. And it's a little bit unusual in terms of what we would, you know, be used to today, but it has a really important lesson. It says, this is a quote here from the author, Gerald Fleury. God gave Ezekiel some peculiar instructions that provide a graphic illustration of the future downfall of the modern nations of Israel. It says, and you, son of man, take a sharp knife, take a barber's razor, and cause it to pass upon your head and upon your beard. And so basically what happens is Ezekiel cuts his hair and then separates it into three parts. It says, and you shall take a third part You shall burn with fire a third part in the midst of the city. And that's from Ezekiel 5, verses 1 through 2. The first third is burned with fire in the city. And so that's where this prophecy from Ezekiel ties into what we're seeing today. A little bit unusual. People don't do those types of things today, but God was using this as a picture, as an illustration to show where what we're seeing today is going. And that's burning cities. And that's a third part of the population. How many people is that?
Does that not sound extremely accurate as well? With what we're seeing with cities already burning at the slightest provocation, supposed injustice by law enforcement, it's only going to get worse when you consider that there's going to be an economic siege that is also prophesied that's going to hem us in. And you can see that coming even as well with Mr. Trump's, I guess, belligerence when it comes to trading with other nations, because he wants to sort of bolster American industry. The thing is, other nations can retaliate, and that could lead to an economic siege. Once people start losing their jobs, or maybe they miss a few meals, can you imagine how much worse the riots are going to get then? It's not just about someone in a city across the country from you being shot by a police officer. It's now affecting everyone's lives individually. A lot of people losing jobs, a lot of people going hungry. That's a lot more direct than supposed police brutality.
Yeah, well, when there's all this tension already, and it's being fed by the media in a lot of ways, and then it becomes a situation where, as is talked about in this chapter, this is Ezekiel booklet, this chapter 4, about an economic siege, as you mentioned there, Grant, and it's talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today as well, and you don't have what you need. People become very antsy very quick. Every shopping season around Christmas time, right, they have the Black Friday, I guess it is, and every year, what do you see? You see footage of people shoving everybody out of the way, trampling them to get the newest gadget or whatever they want to get. All their needs are met. They just want the next thing. And in some cases, people die. They're trampled. Now, what happens if that's actually something you need? It's food. And it's not one day. It's several days, weeks, months. You can see how things are going to spiral very quickly. Is that a pretty picture? Does anyone like to think about that? Not really. But that's the reality of what we're seeing beginning to happen in some of the cities.
And the sad part of it is, it has been proven that our response to, say, natural disasters is worse than other nations, where the looting begins immediately here. People immediately take advantage of the situation just to grab a new pair of shoes or to grab a new TV. Imagine what it would be like when the shelves at the grocery store are empty for a couple of weeks, and maybe there's only a few loaves of bread for the entire city to try to fight over. That's going to lead to a lot of problems that are far worse than what we see right now.
Well, those are the iconic images of, say, those riots in L.A. in 92. People walking with big televisions. Of course, back then it wasn't the HD variety, so they were really big. They were the big old guys.
It's quite a workout.
Yeah. And you have to stop and look at that and say, well, what does that have to do with social justice?
Right.
What did you need the TV for? You know, and so clearly people were, it was just a smash and grab. And the thing about those riots in particular, from the documentaries I've seen about them, is the police knew where it was going to start. There was a particular liquor store. They said, when things start, they're going to happen here. Mm-hmm. And they did. And they stood and watched them. The first thing that happened for the social protesters, I guess, was they smashed a liquor store and stole all the alcohol. I'm not sure how that relates to justice in any way. But you can see it doesn't matter at that point. It's just about everyone kind of going crazy and being lawless. And that's what we see in all of these riots.
You make a great point about the social justice. There's probably a lot more to it than just trying to achieve equality for all people, which, if we're being honest with ourselves, people have that here. That's not a problem that we face in this country. But when you have even the media covering up what happens in a lot of these occasions, if you have a radical left-wing protest, they call it a protest even though there's being bricks thrown through shop windows and things like that. People are lighting things on fire and hitting people with metal poles. They call that a peaceful protest in the media. And so it's like they have a cover for what they're doing, and then they can just take advantage of the situation and steal whatever they please. Yeah, I don't think the motives behind these types of social justice movements are as noble as they would like to make it seem.
Yeah, for sure. This Ezekiel booklet points this out. Here's a quote. It says, "The Los Angeles police in those riots and National Guard did virtually nothing, rewarding rioters with stolen goods and an opportunity to commit violence, in some cases even murder." In some cases, that was even on TV. You could see it happening. And the quote continues, "Other angry individuals seeing such lack of forceful intervention will be greatly encouraged to riot elsewhere in the future. This is the truth that no one wants to admit." And that is the danger. Even in those, just a few of the headlines we read this at the beginning, it started over in Virginia, right? And so these other cities are starting to heat up now. Seattle, some places in Texas, other places. That's what happens, especially when people see that nothing is done. You know, you won't be arrested or there won't be problem in the sense of law enforcement stopping you. Then what's going to stop people from going out and taking what they want, what they feel is theirs, or exacting the revenge they feel they should exact? Nothing. The law is the only thing that stops people from just kind of losing it. And that law is being held back more and more and more. How could this end well? It's just not going to end well.
And like you said, it's causing cities around the country to heat up. What does something that happened in Virginia have to do with Washington State or Texas, unless you believe the myth that the entire police force nationwide is institutionally racist and that it was built to enslave minorities? That's what a lot of people actually believe now. And when you undermine the authority like that, and you even have the president insinuating those things for 8 years, you're just going to embolden a lot of people, and especially when the police aren't even allowed to act. It would seem if they're so tyrannical that maybe they would actually just open fire whenever people are losing their minds in the city like that.
Well, you know, you've got the media there at the riots. I watched it on the weekend, the coverage, and it was, just to be honest, it was fairly infuriating to see how biased the reporting was.
Yeah.
And also, so if you're there as a law enforcement official, you know it's a tense environment. You know people are looking at you. What are you going to do? The cameras are on you. Everyone's got a cell phone now. They're all filming the police. They're nervous. This Ezekiel booklet says, the public outcry against the police has been intense and sustained. Now, as a result, the police fear to act even more than they have feared to in the past. Many policemen only feel secure if they do almost nothing. So imagine if you needed their help and they're so scared they don't want to do anything. We're seeing more and more of that occurring, the police just standing down.
Right, and that's really allowing many more people to set cities on fire without consequence. I never really hear of people being arrested and facing much prison time for it. Maybe a few of them, like out of the hundreds or thousands causing problems, actually get caught for it.
Right. The headlines are about the fellow that drove the car into the crowd when he's getting in trouble, as he should. But what about everybody? I mean, what about everybody else? Now, there's another side to that, though. The social media people, they're starting to put people's pictures and names up that were part of the, I guess, neo-Nazi group. So people are losing jobs. They're being, you know, attacked on social media. And that may seem like that's a righteous thing in some ways, but what would prevent anybody from just picking somebody out and saying they're this, they're that? No trial, no looking at the facts, no investigation. You're guilty, you're gone. Mm-hmm. I don't want to live in that society.
Exactly. And even when they were taking pictures of those neo-Nazis, that was, I think, in a lot of cases before the violence even started. So, you know, maybe they weren't trying to make it a big deal that they were going to protest the removal of that monument. Maybe they weren't even directly a part of one of those neo-Nazi groups, but neo-Nazis showed up. I mean, I mentioned that grandpa and his young grandson there at the monument. What if they got lumped in with a neo-Nazi group and they had their picture posted like they were some sort of hateful racist as well? It's just not fair to, I guess, lump everyone in. And then, of course, when you post it online, you're ruining people's lives, even if they didn't necessarily deserve that treatment.
Right. It's a really bad situation. You can see how it's deteriorating. And again, what you can expect to see happen. And then, I mean, there's a lot of bad news, there's no doubt, but then there's a lot of good news, too, and it's in this booklet, Ezekiel, The End Time Prophet. It is at thetrumpet.com, and it's free. as all the material is. You can read it right there, right now, or you can have it sent to you, and which is a great way to do it, too. Another quote from that book, it says, in relation to, say, what's happening in the cities and the police, it says, other authorities also fear to act, thinking riots may be ignited in other cities. Our government is paralyzed by fear. And right, even the current administration, which is maybe a little more bold in what they say, they can't say anything without being attacked on every side. That takes a toll to where no one wants to do or say anything unless it's media approved.
Right, especially when you're talking about the left wing element of this violence. They didn't want him to even mention that. They wanted him to pretend like it didn't even exist, like there was no one there in Virginia except for the neo-Nazis. There was no one there wishing to preserve history. There was no one there specifically to attack the neo-Nazis. It was just neo-Nazis and hateful white supremacists. What they're doing is they're elevating one sort of evil over all the others. I mean, all sides in that are violent. All sides in that have a lot of hatred for certain groups of people. And, I mean, all sides of that are extremely, extremely, extremely extreme. So why are they only picking out the white group and not the black group that was also there?
Yeah, this quote continues, and it's pretty daunting to think about this. It says, again, this is Gerald Fleury writing in this Ezekiel booklet, "We no longer have control of our cities. U.S. citizens already have 200 million guns." If everybody knows that, that's always in the news. It says, "As a result of race riots, more guns will be sold," which is true. When those things heat up, you do see them fly off the shelves. "The people see that our government won't protect them, and they don't trust God to protect them either. So what do people do in those situations? They start to look to themselves. It's a bad, bad deal." But he says, "There is only one solution to this nightmare. Our people, black, white, whatever the race, must repent and turn to God. If we fail to do that, the suffering is just the beginning." And that's one thing we don't hear anything about in any of these reports. How about repentance and forgiveness? Nobody talks about that.
Right. And they also don't even advise people to stay away from those flashpoints. People should use wisdom and not even go anywhere near a violent conflict like that. And then, of course, it gets a lot deeper than that with repentance as well. I mean, God is letting these things happen because of really this nation's past sins. Mr. Fleury in this book goes on to talk about how slavery was evil, and it seems like white people are suffering in a lot of ways now for allowing that to happen, even though we did eventually stop it.
It's that is just something that we don't hear about, except in this book, this Ezekiel book and the other write-ups here at thetrumpet.com. But if you look at the situation in Virginia, you could pick any other one, and look at all the people there and all the sides and say, okay, is one side 100% right here and the other side is 100% wrong? No, of course not. There's problems on both sides. What about both sides taking a step back, thinking about what they need to change, and then, you know, forgiving the guy across the way? That we're not seeing that happen, and that's not the spirit of it. It has happened a couple of times. There's a great, actually, Key of David about that, where it was, I forget the city now, it was there on the East Coast, too, where a few years ago there was that shooting, where that white fellow came in, he shot up that black church.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah. And what did they do? They came out. I mean, they obviously condemned it. It was a terrible, terrible thing, but they came out and they forgave the guy, and they just moved on. They didn't riot. They're obviously, you know, they hate the actions, of course, but they didn't take it to, you know, the extreme of going and, like, rioting and protesting. What a great example. There's a whole Key of David about that at thetrumpet.com. And so there are some really positive examples like that, but you don't see enough highlight being put on those examples where people do forgive somebody else and then try to move forward.
Yeah, there's also an episode of The Sun Also Rises about that black fella who made friends with members of the Ku Klux Klan. That's one of the last things you would ever expect a black person to try to do, but all he did was extend the hand of friendship, and somehow it worked. So what can often happen is if we divide ourselves into groups based on color or gender or ethnicity, we start to get some wrong inaccurate notions of the other groups. And if we just actually went and talked to these other people and realized we're all human beings, maybe we happen to be born of a different skin color, which is an incredibly shallow difference anyway, it's a lot easier to realize that so many people of so many different backgrounds have a lot in common. I mean, you even see that in this church. Mr. Fleury brings that out in the book as well. We don't have racial tension in the church. There are people of all races and people all around the world who are here, and you never see there's any division based on race.
Yeah, that's this is an exact quote here from the book, this Ezekiel book. It says, Mr. Fleury writes, God's church includes all races. We are in unity and harmony. We love each other and work with each other. If we don't, then you know, we're going to have our issues too. It's, you know, God's law is not, it doesn't play favorites. Everybody has to follow it, and it brings good results. He says we have all races because we are going to be used in those leadership positions. I mean, that's what God's trying to do with mankind, and there's a lot about that in Mystery of the Ages, Incredible Human Potential, other books at thetrumpet.com, where, you know, man's supposed to learn how to care for each other and teach each other. You know, and teach the younger generations that are coming up God's way. And yet you see people more and more divided today. That's not the way it's intended to be. And so in people's individual lives, you know, hopefully people take make the effort to not get caught up in all of this tension, this racial stuff, and really, you know, live the right way in trying to love everybody, regardless of, you know, skin differences or whatever else. So on the individual level, that's what everyone should aspire to do, even though you don't see it in the media, you don't see it in some of these larger groups out there. But individually, people should be striving for that unity.
Right. And it's strange because we do see different stereotypes of different groups of people. And yet, in my experience, when I've actually gone and talked to people or interacted with them, they're just totally pleasant. It's totally easy to find common ground and things that we can relate on and talk about. People are people, and we all are living on the same planet. It's not like certain people are just completely different in every way. We all have certain things in common. That's something that everyone could understand and try to make a better effort on, especially in the situation we're in now with the tensions we have. Why not make more of an effort to reach through to people that maybe we don't get to interact with as often?
There's this one other quote here from this Ezekiel booklet in relation to that. And again, it's a free booklet at thetrumpet.com. It says, and we're broadcasting here from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College also. It says, that's why we have students come to Herbert W. Armstrong College from around the world. We are all here as God's family, the spiritual house of Israel. It doesn't matter what color you are. We are here to bring all nations together and show the world, even in a small way today, how to make it work. And so that's a challenge for people, say in their individual lives, in their community, or in their, you know, family, is to set an example of how to make things work. I mean, we see plenty of examples of how not to make things work, and those are all over the place. You can't turn around without seeing another one, especially on the news and television and stuff. And so while they're all arguing and blaming everybody, you know, people that really want it to be different need to step back from that, take a look at this book here on Ezekiel, see where the tensions today are leading, and then say, look, I'm going to make a change. I'm going to be different in my life. And then slowly but surely, you do see changes come about.
Yes, and Mr. Fleury mentioned the spiritual house of Israel there. Stunningly enough, sadly enough, some people try to even dismiss God's truth as being racist, since he did pick a physical nation of Israel, which Mr. Armstrong said many times, that nation happened to be white. It could have very easily been black or yellow. God wasn't picking favorites, but he just picked one nation to try to work with. And now it's the spiritual house of Israel, which is not any color at all. The people who have rebelled against God in this end time have actually tried to dismiss Mr. Herbert Armstrong's book, United States and Britain in Prophecy. They got rid of it very quickly, which we talked about on Friday. They cut it out of circulation pretty much as soon as he died in 1986. And yet there's so much depth and inspiration in that book as well, just about how God tried and failed to use a physical nation. That's why God is so upset with these white nations, these nations descended from Israel. That's why we're experiencing so many of these problems, because they turned away from God. And yet there's a spiritual church today, a spiritual house of Israel today, that is actually taking the place of those nations of Israel. And we're doing what those nations could never do. We see it out there all the time that they could never have peace like they should. They could never have true abundance and prosperity and lasting happiness because they're just living in rebellion. And that's why the church is so much different.
Yeah, one last quote here. This is a great quote. It's from this Ezekiel book. And it's, the book is Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. It's free at thetrumpet.com. And check it out there, or you can get the copy sent to you. But it says, Mr. Fleury writes, "This world is about to see the end of all liars, racists, and hate mongers. They will soon be obliterated from this earth. That type of behavior just won't be tolerated." And he says, "That is why Satan is in a rage, because he knows his time is running out." Another thing people never talk about when you talk about racial tensions and all this violence, you never hear Satan brought up. People think that's a joke, I guess, that he's not real, or that's just some sort of a fantasy. And I saw a really interesting article today, actually. I think it was in from the Washington Post. And they were talking about racism, and they said, well, racism is in the air. Yeah, they're right. It is in the air.
Wow.
Satan is the prince of the power of the air. Now, they didn't mean it that way, but he does. The Bible says he broadcasts. There's lots of Key of David programs that talk a lot about how he broadcasts, how he gets his ideas, his moods, his emotions out there into people's minds. And so that write-up, I think it was the Washington Post, they inadvertently hit on the right thing, though they didn't mean it that way. It is in the air. You know, do people ever stop and think, well, why, you know, why would I be so upset? Why would I be so worked up against this, that, or the other? In most cases, it's because there's an influence there. You don't hear people talk about that because, well, you'd be laughed at, I guess. You wouldn't hold your job very long at a lot of media outlets if you brought up something like that. But why should it be so strange? The Bible says it. It's very clear, but people don't want to believe that.
And even people who believe God exists don't believe that Satan exists, or they believe that this is God's world and Satan has a minimal impact. Well, the fruits are everywhere that that's not the case, because why are people murdering each other in the streets right now? Why is that happening in this country if the only influence we have is from a perfect, loving God? There has to be another influence somewhere that is causing this hatred. Otherwise, we would just be doing exactly what God wanted all the time. That's obviously not the case with any of us. We're not totally living perfect lives, and that's because there's another power out there.
Yeah, and if you look at any of these situations where there's tension, you know, who wins? Nobody wins. Every side, every group, they are hurt and harmed by it. And, you know, again, it's because there's an evil influence there that hates all mankind. And so you see it, not the popular teaching, of course. People are not interested in talking about that. They want to get into other things. But that's what the Bible talks about. And, of course, it's explained very well here in this booklet, or book, rather. It's a book. It's a free book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. And it's at thetrumpet.com. And I just love that last quote there about the world seeing the end of all liars, racists, and hate mongers. We hear enough lying. We hear enough racial rants. We hear enough hate mongering. It's on all the time. And it'll be nice for that to be done with. Everyone can finally take like a deep breath and just relax for 5 seconds.
Exactly. I mean, you think about Satan and how he must think, knowing that he has caused people to hate each other based on the color of their skin. That's such a shallow difference. I mean, God basically created different races to have different types of beauty, like there are different types of flowers. That's how Mr. Armstrong described it. And yet Satan has caused people to hate each other. That's like a pansy hating a tulip. I mean, it's just a ridiculous thing to even get mad about. We're all people with very small physical differences, and yet Satan has been able to exploit that small difference, that insignificant difference, and cause people to want to kill each other. It's just a sad state of the world.
Yeah, there are plenty of historical examples of even where people are all the same race, they end up killing each other over some other difference. So right. It doesn't matter. It keeps...
Like once they've cleared out one race, then they turn on each other for having a different type of feature.
Sure. And yeah. That happens, and it just shows you that it's not really a racial issue. It's a Satan issue is what it is. So that's talked about here in this book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. It has 16 chapters. Really fascinating. It goes into a lot of detail about the book of Ezekiel in the Bible. If you've ever wondered what some of that prophecy is about, this book explains it, and chapter 4 specifically related to the topic today about terrorism and race riots. It would be a great time to get that out and read it. If you haven't in a while, or if you've never looked at it, now would be a great time to look at it, because otherwise, how are you going to know what's going to happen? There's a lot of information out there, but not good information. So get this book, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hope in it. We've obviously talked a lot about a lot of the bad news, but the hope obviously being in this church today, a type of really an example of what the world tomorrow is going to be like, where all the people will dwell together in unity. They'll believe the same basic things, which is founded on God's truth. They will not think that certain races are evil anymore. That's just how it is today, but it will change very soon. The good news is really overwhelming, and yet Ezekiel has possibly the strongest warning in the Bible leading up to that good news.
Yeah. Imagine what people could accomplish in a community or in the world if people stopped fighting each other and worked together. It'd be pretty spectacular, actually. It's amazing what man has done, even in spite of wars breaking out every couple of months, it seems like. So really important book for this this time that we're in, Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet. You can get that for free at thetrumpet.com. And also make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, which gets into this topic as well, takes a different look at it, about what's going on with some of the tension and the media in the U.S. Trumpet Daily Radio Show is coming up here in a bit. And there's a lot of good Key of David programs as well that deal with some of these topics. You can find all that at thetrumpet.com. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.